Good evening, friends. As one converses with his acquaintances these days, he senses a rather general mood of skepticism about the future, and often a very gloomy pessimism. There can be little doubt that the climactic events of the past few years have left us dazed and baffled. All along, our people have had a healthy confidence that the war would, in due course, be won. But what about the future, both here at home and abroad? Europe presents a picture of starvation and confusion. Asia presents even greater problems. And here in the United States, what about industrial conflict, unemployment, inflation, the national debt, and a host of other ominous post-war issues? You shake your head, mutter your doubts, and go about the day's activities as best you can. I think there are two or three things we ought to remember before we permit ourselves to wallow in a slough of despondency. Any war is a terribly upsetting experience. When the pot boils, the scum comes to the top, it is said. This war has been so prolonged, so widespread, and so destructive of life and property that the whole world has felt its impact. Old antagonisms and old problems, some of them dormant, became acute. Nations, classes, and individuals strive to achieve their own purposes while there is a chance, while conditions are fluid and changing. When you stop to think of it, many of the problems which seem to us today so pressing were there 10, 20, or 50 years ago. Some people get gloomy because their particular idea of democracy has not been adopted in every country. Such folks expect too much, too fast. There are vast areas where the people are quite incapable of self-government. There are vast areas where the people never have known the meaning of liberty as we conceive it. There are vast areas where, for untold centuries, the people have been downtrodden and oppressed. 15 or 20 years ago, these conditions did not produce a mood of pessimism in us. We knew about them and accepted them as being something no one could do anything about. The problems were there, but we just weren't conscious of them or concerned about them. Consider the race question in this country. Is the status of the Negro today worse than it was 10, 15, or 20 years ago? On the contrary, it is markedly better. The difference is that we have become conscious of and concerned about the problem of race relations, and the war has had a very great part in creating this attitude. One reason, therefore, that the world seems to be in such a mess is that everything has been stirred up by this war. Another reason is that everywhere the little people of the earth are clamoring for a greater share of the good things of life. At the start of the war, a good deal was said to the effect that the world was experiencing a vast revolution and a war at the same time. A good deal of this talk was eyewash, but there was a grain of truth in it. The masses of people in all countries are stirring from their lethargy and demanding that ancient injustices be corrected, that ancient wrongs be righted. One cause of this has been the spread of literacy and education. Millions of persons have become aware for the first time that they need not meekly submit to misery as their lot in life. More and more people are congregating in great cities where they can more easily exchange their thoughts and ideas and where they can act concertedly. Henry Wallace was not so far wrong, perhaps, when he called this the century of the common man. Is this socialism or communism? Not at all. Most people in this country and in other countries are not convinced that socialism or communism is the best method of achieving what they want. Personally, I believe that individual freedom and initiative will survive the present onslaught in the long run, but it will not be unrestrained liberty. Individual freedom and initiative will not survive as the right to exploit others. The common good must come first. Just as in war, so is in peace. The quest of personal wealth and power must be second to the common welfare. And it is sheer stupidity to hold that there is no conflict between the two, that if everyone is absolutely free to do as he pleases, the greatest good to the greatest number will follow. That has been tried and found wanting. We must be willing to submit to regulation and control in the interests of the common welfare. The extent to which there is such willingness will determine how peaceful the future will be. If a nation persists in seeking to expand its wealth and power by exploiting others, there's going to be trouble. If labor or management here at home looks only to its own interests and fails to regard the common welfare, there's going to be trouble. It all depends on whether we can learn anything from the past. The greatest danger lies in the conflict between the right and left within the nations, and this conflict can lead to war between the nations. The next world war, if there is one, will not start with aggression, as we understand that term, I think. It will start with one nation championing the right, another the left, in an internal disturbance within some country. Whether it comes to that depends on whether the right and the left have sense enough to understand that the atomic bomb falls on the just and the unjust. Good night.